Hm? Ah!
Wait. They said 50 years old.
Species age differently. Perhaps it could live many centuries. Sadly, we'll never know.
No. We'll bring it in alive.
The commission was quite specific. The asset was to be terminated.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
And this is House Podcastica, and this week we start our coverage of the new Disney Plus show, The Mandalorian.
Hooray!
Yeah. My friend Brian said we should call this podcast Mansplaining the Mandalorian.
Yeah, that's probably what it's going to be, huh?
Yeah. We'll try to get a Womandalorian on here at some point to guest with us.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah, they exist. We saw them.
That's right. Blacksmiths. So I thought before we got into it, we would just do a little bit about why we decided to podcast on this show. There's a bunch of shows that came out that I thought about, like Watchmen and His Dark Materials and a few other ones, but landed on this one. Why does this interest you guys?
Well, I mean, Star Wars.
Yeah. That kind of says it all.
You know, I've been a Star Wars fan since I was born, essentially. I'm only 2 years older than, or 3 years older than the release date for the first movie. And I remember seeing Empire and Jedi in the theater. I mean, barely remember, but I know I was there. My dad told me so. And I've just been a fan my whole life. So when The Mandalorian came along, it's something I had to watch. And when you brought up the idea of doing a podcast, I was all over it, almost.
Yeah.
But, I think, you know, it took this to get you to do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If I would have said Watchmen, you'd be like, nah.
Well, I like Watchmen too, and I'm really dying to watch the other one you mentioned, His Dark Materials, yeah. But I haven't watched those yet. But Star Wars, come on. Like, that's what drew me in, of course.
You know, brainer. Pretty much me too, although I have to say, as more and more Star Wars stuff comes out, I feel like it doesn't always add to the brand or the Star Wars mythology. Sometimes it takes away from it. And I don't think I would have, we've already had some TV series, the Clone Wars and Rebels and this new one, The Resistance or whatever it is. I mean, they're great, but this one in particular attracted me because it's the first live action Star Wars series, but also because it's headed up by Jon Favreau, who I admired since Swingers, and he did an awesome job with Iron Man. And you could tell just from that he's not like a corporate guy trying to figure out how to make the most money out of things. He's a fan who wants to make things as cool as possible, you know?
Yeah. Sure. And he's an older fan. He remembers the original movies.
Yeah. Like, Star Wars is actually, I saw it in the theater when I was 6, and it was the third movie I saw after Jaws, because my mom was a child abuser, and Snow White. And I remember seeing those.
I remember seeing the premiere. I remember seeing the red carpet going down to the Brigsmore theaters, and I remember seeing R2-D2 and C-3PO, and I was like, Mom, look at that. What is that? Let's go watch that movie. And my mom was like, that's just a stupid movie. It's never going to take off.
And look where we are.
Yeah. It changed everything. Star Wars changed movies in general. Well, yeah, so we're big fans, and I'm in particular think that this show looked like a really cool idea, made after, you know, kind of modeled after one of the coolest Star Wars characters, Boba Fett. And so that's why we're doing it. And I wanted also to talk a little bit about the context of the show in case people aren't that familiar with the whole mythology behind Star Wars, or, you know, might have forgotten and stuff. So I thought I'd talk about what is a Mandalorian in particular, and basically where the concept of the Mandalorian comes from. So like I just mentioned, you know, it all started with Boba Fett. And I didn't actually remember this, but do you guys remember when Boba Fett's first appearance was?
Yes. Oh, I know this. It was in the like the TV special, right?
Yeah, the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yeah, right. Cool.
Which is super cheesy. It came out in 1978 after the first Star Wars movie, and it was this whole thing with Han Solo and Chewbacca going back to Chewbacca's home planet of Kashyyyk for the Life Day festival where he met with his whole family, and it was all of these like songs, and it was kind of like a variety show. And but then the one cool part of it was this cartoon that had Boba Fett as a character, and I remember he seemed like he might have been a good guy, but then you realize at the end that he's not. He's working with Darth Vader to try and round up all the rebels and everything.
Right. But he's instantly, I mean, he's an instant draw for fans, I think. I remember the first time seeing him, not on the Star Wars Christmas special, but probably is it in Empire?
Yes.
I think? Yeah. And instantly being like, oh, mysterious bounty hunter character. I need to know more about that. And immediately he becomes my favorite character as a kid. And then, you know, I debated endlessly, I think, with my friends about whether or not he died when he fell in the Sarlacc pit. And how did he get out if he did? And where is he now? And what's he doing? So he's just, you get so little of him early on, I think, that it's just impossible not to be intrigued.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he's a mystery. And even before Empire came out, after the holiday special, I think he, you know, those, I guess it was Kenner, the Star Wars toys, they had some mail-in special where you could get the special Boba Fett one, and it became popular. And I really think that one of the main reasons his popularity just caught fire with all the kids. And I think one of the main reasons is just because the costume looks so cool.
Yeah. And he had that helmet on all the time. So, you know, you can imagine yourself behind that helmet.
Right.
You know, the one thing that, well, the one of the many things Star Wars does amazingly well is helmet design. When you think about Boba Fett and Darth Vader and stormtroopers and even things like X-Wing pilot helmets, I thought were super cool when I was younger and still do. They know what they're doing with helmets.
At the beginning of this Mandalorian, you see this little sequence that shows Darth Vader and C-3PO, R2-D2. Yeah, I think there's an X-Wing pilot, a TIE fighter pilot, and then it ends with the Mandalorian helmet. And yeah, it's like, wow, there's some iconic heads in this series.
Yeah, like all of them.
So Boba Fett, he, as we find out in the prequels, is the clone son of Jango Fett, who was the template for all the clones that the clone troopers were modeled after. And Jango Fett comes from the moon of Mandalore. So a Mandalorian is just, in its broadest sense, someone who comes from the planet Mandalore. So actually, Boba Fett's not technically a Mandalorian, and neither is Jango Fett, because he came from the moon of Mandalore, although that's sort of debatable. But anyway, what a Mandalorian is someone who comes from Mandalore, and Mandalore has this troubled history of war and civil war, and it ravaged the planet and killed most of the population, and there's these battle-hardened warrior clans. And so typically when you talk about Mandalorian, you're talking about a member of one of these warrior clans. Mm-hmm. And they went against the Jedi, and from Wikipedia, it says, after encountering the Jedi during the early Crusades, the Mandalorian-Jedi War began. And it was during this period that the Mandalorians created their signature armor, weaponry, and fighting style in order to combat the Jedi Knights and their force abilities. And then it says the last great struggle between the Jedi and the Mandalorian warlords resulted in a large battle on Mandalore. This caused a cataclysm that scorched much of the planet's surface into lifeless white desert, and ending the conflict, the Jedi emerging victorious. So I really like that, because it sets up like this maybe innate hatred of the Jedi, which could be really interesting. And also, I think it just shows that there, you know, we saw in the first episode some flashbacks to his childhood with lots of war. So the idea is that they're just really battle hardened. They've gone through a lot of struggle, and there's maybe even that's why there's not, you don't see that many of them around, because most of them have been killed off.
Wow.
Right.
I want you to make a movie of that.
So there's a little history. And then I just thought also, before we get into it, it's important to talk about what place in the timeline this show is in. It's set during the period of chaos right after the downfall of the Empire in Return of the Jedi. I think it starts 5 years after the end of Return of the Jedi. So the New Republic is the new government, but it hasn't probably reached the edges of the galaxy where the Mandalorian dwells. And it's way before the events in Force Awakens, where we saw, the New Republic is kind of ineffective and this new resistance is rising. So I hope we're going to get to see more about that. I think it's really interesting for it to be in this time period, because I always felt like Return of the Jedi just kind of ended abruptly and we didn't get to see what happened after the Empire was defeated, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I think 5 years after Jedi puts it about 25 years before The Force Awakens starts.
Okay.
So there's plenty of time before that movie, before we get into that time frame.
And I always felt, watching The Force Awakens, that was one of the things that I'm like, how did we get to this point where this, what do you call, God, Star Wars fans are going to hate me, but what do you call Kylo Ren's group, the Resistance?
Kylo Ren's group?
Yeah, just
the New Order.
The New Order?
Uh-huh. Isn't it? They're the bad guys, and the Resistance are like the new rebels.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, just that whole thing, it just bugs me that after everything we saw our people fight for, it just ended up being kind of ineffective, you know? The First Order, that's what it's called.
Oh, the First Order, right.
Yeah.
See, now that you've mentioned that, I'm worried that we're going to get things wrong and people are going to be really upset.
Yeah. So we are
going to get stuff wrong.
Yeah. Like I would say on, a level one, someone who doesn't know that much and is new to it, and level 10, someone who knows every little detail, we're somewhere in the middle probably.
Mm.
Right.
Just an armchair fan.
Maybe a six.
I mean, I think there was a time in my life when I was probably an eight, but I've swung way down now.
Yeah.
Maybe five or four even. So please forgive us, everybody, if we misspeak occasionally.
Yeah, but we're going to do our best. And I've actually, been digging back into all the lore in preparation for this podcast. So I'm excited to dive back into all of this. And it's amazing. And that's another thing I love about Star Wars is just that it created this world and galaxy that it felt like a real place, and there's so much detail and the design is just so amazing and beautiful that even as a little kid, I just felt like it really existed,
And it's huge now. It's ginormous.
Yeah. It's deep and huge. And George Lucas, I mean, one of the best things he ever did was decide to make everything look worn versus the standard sci-fi trope of having everything be silvery and shiny.
Yeah.
And it made it feel lived in and real. And then the relationships with the characters, at least in the first trilogy, seemed really natural. And I don't know, it all just felt so real to me. So one last thing, a quote from Jon Favreau, who's, he's the main man behind The Mandalorian. He's talking about this time period. He says, it's like after the Roman Empire falls, or when you don't have a centralized shogun in Japan, and of course the Old West, when there wasn't any government in the areas that had not yet been settled. So that's kind of the feeling he's going for, like a lawless Old West type feel.
That's awesome. I think he captured it really well. I didn't know a lot of what you just said. So now having heard that and then having watched the episode, I'm like, wow, that really kind of nailed it.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, one thing I like about this show, at least so far from just seeing one episode, is it seems like they made it so that anyone can appreciate it. Even if you're just coming to this for the first time, the story is pretty simple and easy to grasp, but there's so many little details that just speak to the expansiveness of the Star Wars universe and the depth of it and everything that they pay homage to if you care about that stuff. So let's get into what our top three highlights of this episode, The Mandalorian Season 1, Episode 1, entitled Chapter 1. Let's say just first in general how we liked this episode. Chris?
Okay, well, in general, I think if I had to give this episode a score or a mark, I would give it a B-. which isn't amazing, but also not terrible, because I think this episode was good, but it didn't really blow my mind in any way, which I'll get into more, I think, as we talk through things here. But I enjoyed it, but I thought it was not as amazing as I hoped, let's put it that way.
It didn't live up to your hopes. Yeah.
It didn't quite live up to my hopes. And anyone who knows me will tell you that I do have a tendency to get really high expectations and sometimes be let down just because of my own brain going, this is going to be the greatest thing ever, you know, going into it. And I try to manage that a little bit, and I'm working on it. But, you know, Star Wars and Mandalorian, and I was pretty pumped up for it. So I think I was just a touch let down, but I do think it was good, and I really enjoyed watching it.
I kind of felt like that too, especially on first watch. But after the first watch, when I started diving into all these details and everything, reading back about the history, and then watched it a second time, I liked it a lot more, which does tend to happen. And
sure.
So I think it was pretty rad. What about you, Rich?
Rad. It was rad. You know, I really enjoyed it. I went in, like Chris mentioned, you know, with the expectations. Mine were pretty low because I wasn't really thinking too much about it. Been busy lately. And so I went in it with an open mind. And I would have to say, when I watched it the first time, I'd give it an A, maybe even an A+, because I was, like, sucked right into the nostalgia and excitement of it all. I was like from the very beginning, with like what you mentioned earlier, the flashes of the Star Wars helmets characters, and then the first few seconds of the show where he's standing out there kind of like in an open desert area, and I was like, whoa, this feels like Star Wars, this is cool. But then I watched it a second time and I was like, oh, I didn't really quite get the same feeling the first time, but it was still pretty good. So I would have to settle probably around a B, something like what Chris was saying.
Yeah. I think it definitely has a feel. If you were going to pick any of the Star Wars movies, it felt like it was in the first one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The original.
Seems like a lot of it was set on a similar planet to Tatooine. Tatooine itself, I'm not sure.
I mean, that makes sense, because Jon Favreau said he loved the cantina scene from Star Wars, and he wanted to set a whole series in those kind of places with the seedy underbelly of the galaxy on the fringes and stuff like that. So
right.
That's what it felt like. Okay.
Well, I mean, Jason, as you were saying a minute ago, Star Wars does really well with that kind of world building and making everything kind of run down and a bit grimy and stuff mm-hmm. like that. I wanted to mention that just last week I was at Disney World down in Florida, and I went to Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, which is their new Star Wars theme park. And it's like that, too. It's extremely immersive. You feel like you're walking around Tatooine. I mean, other than all the like tourists and flip flops and stuff. But right. like they've done a really fantastic job of creating that place. And flying the Millennium Falcon was amazing and stuff like that. But I mentioned that because Star Wars and I guess Disney now does an amazing job at making it immersive, and The Mandalorian is no exception in that regard. I do think it feels like you're, you know, right in this rich world, rich universe,
mm-hmm.
yeah. walking around it.
Yeah, they did a good job. I think it's about, well, I think I read it's $100 million for the whole season. So that's like $12 million an episode or something like that, which, is, you know, sounds like a lot of money, but this was a 45-minute episode. So if you expand that out to be, you know, for like 2.5 episodes, 24, like maybe $30 million if it was movie length, that wouldn't be very much. So I guess that's all just to say, I think they did a pretty good job with the budget they had of making it feel like it was just as good as a movie. I mean,
yeah.
The pacing was slower than most movies, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good point about the budget, though. Like, I'm sure the Star Wars movie budgets are in the $200 million range. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but $200 million versus $30.
They're up there.
Quite a difference, yeah.
Okay, let's get into our top three. Rich, you want to go first?
Yeah, okay. So number three on my list was Baby Yoda. Oh, Baby Yoda. I'm not sure
to the end.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a couple other things I liked a little better, but Baby Yoda was a pretty cool surprise, I thought. And then, you know, of course, that opens up a whole nest of, you know, of conflicts and interests there, you know, like who was the droid working for? Because I don't think they were on the same page there, since the Mandalorian shot the droid in the head. And, you know, and it kind of opens up the possibility of maybe bringing in the Force, or maybe some sort of Jedi presence or something like that. So I found it exciting when they introduced that character, and I'm curious to see where that's going to go. So that's my number three.
That was really like a sharp left turn. It didn't fit in with the rest of the episode, so which made it interesting. Like, oh. Yeah.
I tried to find, too, is there a name for Yoda's race?
There is not, that we know of. Okay. No. I'll talk about Baby Yoda a little bit here, too, because I didn't see that coming at all, and I was really surprised when he showed up there in the last shot. But no, there's no word, or we don't know what Yoda's race is called yet, but I am intrigued by this because Yoda is one of the most, I think, mysterious characters in the Star Wars universe, because we don't know what he is, where he's from. We don't know a lot about his past. And as far as I know, we've only ever seen one other member of his species too.
Yeah.
So now we have a third, and I gotta think we're going to get more of them, or at least get more information, maybe not specifically about Yoda, but definitely about, you know, his species of alien. So I'm pretty intrigued by that. And I'm looking forward to seeing it. So that's sort of what I liked about the surprise of Baby Yoda at the end there.
Yeah.
Yoda's really interesting because it was this little character created by Frank Oz as a puppet. And I think as they were filming him in Empire Strikes Back, they were all, I thought I remember seeing this in one of those making of specials, that they were like, is this really going to work? It's a little puppet, you know, I don't know if it, is it working? And then when it came on the screen, it was just awesome. And I thought he was great. One of my favorite characters right from the start. So his species is listed as unknown in the official Star Wars databank, and George Lucas, for some reason, had maintained this policy of keeping the history, name, origin, and whereabouts of his species unknown. Mm. And when asked what species Yoda is, Lucas replied, he's a frog.
And, okay.
But it seems like the idea is that the origin of his species has been forgotten in universe. I think I read that we'll find out more about it in the show. There have been a few other members actually in the whole Star Wars canon. There was Yaddle, who was in Phantom Menace on the Jedi Council. There was Vandar Tokari, who was, I'm probably pronouncing these wrong, but in the game Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. There was Oteg in the other game Star Wars The Old Republic. And then there was one called Minch in the Star Wars Tales comic from Dark Horse. But, you know, out of all the material that's come out of Star Wars, the novels and the comics and all the other games and movies, that's just not very many. So just a few.
I think Yandel on the Star... Was it Yandel or Yaddle?
Yaddle, yeah.
On the Jedi Council is the one I was thinking of. And
I think she's the most prominent other one.
Right, because I have played some Star Wars video games and read novels over the years, but I'm certainly not totally well-versed on the full expanded universe. But still, that's not that many Yoda people in such a big universe. So, you know, it's definitely got me intrigued, and I want to know more. And then the other thing you said, Rich, is maybe this means they're going to introduce more force sensitive people on this show, because that's the kind of thing that I thought maybe they weren't going to do here, because Boba Fett's not a force sensitive person, I don't believe. And so, you know, maybe they were going to stick to the more grounded, gritty kind of plain, less magic sort of violence on this show. But now with this character, I guess there's no reason to believe that all Yoda characters are force sensitive or Jedis, but certainly Yoda was, obviously, and the one on the Jedi Council you would think was too. So there's some history to say that maybe this particular species is especially in tune with the Force.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking that it, you know, it's a baby, and it's a 50-year-old baby, so I don't think this particular character is going to play that part, but, you know, there might be others come looking for it.
Right. Yeah, there's a reason why this is such a valuable asset that they sent the best bounty hunter after. And I think all those characters I mentioned were Jedi or Force sensitive. So it does seem like that's what they've been getting at least whenever you see a character that's the same species as Yoda, they have something to do with the Force. And I was kind of thinking and even maybe hoping that there wouldn't be any Jedi, at least for a while in the series, because I think it would be cool for Jon Favreau to try and stake out an area of Star Wars that hasn't been so well trodden. And I think that's what he's doing. I think I am hoping there aren't going to be any cute droids either. You know, Mandalorian seems to hate droids, so that helps. But not that I love the droids, but I just think it's cool to explore some other areas of Star Wars that haven't been so well explored. But anyway, then on the other hand, the idea that the Mandalorians might have this vendetta against the Jedi make it seem like maybe there will be something, you know, they'll come in as enemies or something like that.
Yeah, you wouldn't be totally opposed to having a badass Jedi show up at the end episode, right?
Yeah, no way. That would be fine.
After you establish that the Mandalorian is a badass, then you got to introduce another badass and have a badass fight.
Yeah, especially if it's puts them at odds against each other. I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
One other thing I have here about Yoda is, okay, so we know that Yoda in Return of the Jedi is 900 years old or somewhere thereabouts. That's what he says. And so his species, you know, ages slower than humans. So if a 50-year-old Yoda looks like, what would you say, maybe 6 months old?
Yeah,
so
baby.
50 Yoda years is half a human year. That means 100 Yoda years is like one human year, which means our Yoda died at 900. He was kind of like a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
Wow.
That doesn't really make sense. I mean, I don't know. You know, you can't really, I guess, line things up. You know, maybe
they
just
age differently.
50 years, to get into infancy and then they start aging faster after that. Who knows?
Sometimes it's better not to do the math.
Yeah, right. Never tell me the odds.
That's right. Yeah. Math ruins everything, damn it.
Okay, Chris.
Well, just one more thing I want to talk about Baby Yoda there is that one of the things I do think the show did pretty well is balance tone throughout the episode and in fact include different tones, but it didn't feel kind of jarring because we do have this show about who's a guy who's supposed to be this fairly ruthless bounty hunter. You know, that's kind of dark a little bit. There was a little bit of humor in there. And then the final shot with Baby Yoda is why I'm mentioning it now was kind of touching and a little bit surprising for a character like this. Right. And so, I'm glad they included it. And I think it's to give us, a peek into the sort of mentality or the roundedness of this character a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. He can go in and kill a bunch of dudes, but he can also, you know, pull an ET move with the finger and the baby there. So I think that was good.
Yeah. I mean, as I was watching it, well, first off, I sign up for Disney Plus, start going through the catalog. I'm like, holy shit, man, there's all these Marvel movies, Disney classics, Pixar. Yeah. This is pretty awesome. And then I'm like, yeah, it's mostly kids stuff, which is great. You know, I like it all, but The Mandalorian, I would like for it to be edgy and dark. And I feel like we saw him murder a lot of people in this first episode.
Yeah,
and
I know.
They're mostly scoundrels. So I think they're painting him to be an anti-hero, and it is dark, but they're still trying to find that line where you could feel good about your 13-year-old or even 10-year-old watching it, I would say.
Yep. Yeah, I think
that's
it balanced
point,
that
yeah.
pretty well. I mean, I've got a almost 13-year-old and I'd let her watch this. I mean, I don't know if she'd be into it, but I think it would be a pretty safe watch for most, you know, tweens. Mm-hmm.
But I don't want it to be too safe, you know.
As
a 48-year-old man. But it was good. I liked the tone. I thought they had a good tone. And you're right. Like, it had some funny moments, but it wasn't Well, except for maybe when he rode on that one creature, that was a little silly. But other than that, I thought
it was.
I laughed at everything and thought it was good.
Yeah. Well, speaking of being safe, one of my points here is kind of just that. And what I'm sort of getting at is that I felt like it was a pretty straightforward episode. It really, to me, felt like a pilot, which I know might not be fair because that's basically what it was. It was the first episode of a new show. So there are certain things that it has to do or you kind of expect it to do. But I was hoping for maybe something a little bit different. Because, you know, it opens with our main character doing his job, like, you know, collecting a guy, collecting a bounty, which you sort of expect. And then we get a second act, which is where we learn more about kind of why he does that job, a little bit of backstory. And then we have the character move on to do another job that's bigger and more dangerous. And they throw in Baby Yoda at the end, which I've heard people refer to as the snake in the mailbox. That's the surprise at the end that you don't see coming and stuff like that. And it was all kind of formulaic in that way. And I could feel that while I was watching it a little bit. So even though I enjoyed it, it kind of felt pretty straightforward and safe to me. And there wasn't anything really in there that just made my head explode. So I expect big things to come from the show, and I don't think it's going to be that way, even probably in the second episode. I think it's going to find its legs quickly because it's going to introduce new characters. There's a bunch of big name actors that we haven't seen yet, which I'm expecting to do really good things. So I'm not too worried about this, but this episode felt like more of an introduction than it almost even needed to be, in a way.
It was a cautious introduction, huh?
A cautious introduction, exactly, yeah.
It was very simple, and I actually, for what this is, for I think I understand why they did it that way, and I think I probably prefer it than if it had been a huge, like, oh my God, that was totally unexpected. Now, I guess if I saw something unexpected and it was just amazing, then I would like that. But for, you know, if I'm going into a new show that's not based on anything, I could see wanting it to just totally blow my mind as far as weird things happening that I didn't expect or whatever. But for this, I don't know. I guess I kind of liked that it was just, yeah, let's show him at work and then introduce a few mysteries and just kind of dip your toe into this world. But yeah. I understand what you're saying too. I mean, I'm not trying to say it wrong. I'm just my own perspective.
Yeah, totally. I get that. But I sort of feel like because it's an established world already, we don't quite need as much setup or introduction to things as you might think, right? Whereas a completely original show, you do need a little bit more of that, especially in a fantasy or sci-fi genre, right? You need to establish the rules of the universe or the rules of the science that's involved, right? But in Star Wars, I don't feel like you need to do that. So they could have just assumed the audience really knew what we were looking at already, but they didn't really go there.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think that's going to take long. They got this out of the way, and I bet you the second episode coming soon is going to feel very different.
Yeah.
See.
I mean, here's another thing is, can I go into my number three? Are you ready?
Yeah.
It's tone and feel, which we've kind of been talking about a little bit, but I think, you know, one thing that seems to have inspired this show is Westerns, and in particular, probably the Clint Eastwood spaghetti Westerns, in particular, because there's this whole Band with No Name trilogy, which is A Fistful of Dollars and Good, Bad, and the Ugly and a few dollars more, I think. And, he doesn't have a name in that. So that's one reason why, I think, because he's just sort of this mysterious character that rolls into town. And though I think those are pretty simple, and it's more about just soaking up the coolness of the environment, or at least that's what it's supposed to be. So, I mean, even just leaving this argument or debate about whether it's good for it to have been a simple plot that wasn't too unpredictable, And going more into a discussion about tone and feel, I like that it's cool. Like, I feel like Jon Favreau, he likes cool things, and he wanted to, you know, do a show. It excited him probably to do a show built around basically another version of Boba Fett, considered one of the coolest characters in Star Wars, and do it in this old west kind of spare grungy way with all these seedy characters. And so it just had a cool vibe to it. And it had some cool moments. Like, one of the cool moments was when the Mandalorian and this bounty hunter droid, I think it's IG-11, which is kind of like the IG-88 droid we saw in Empire Strikes Back. But the thing about that is IG-88 was part of this lineup of bounty hunters that Darth Vader hired to try and get Han Solo and the crew of the Millennium Falcon. And we just saw him all stiff standing there. And I'm like, what is this guy going to do? And so now we get to see him in action, and he's like twirling around, shooting in any direction. And he just seemed really effective. And you're like, okay, this is why this droid is.
He went from, prop to some fancy gun work there.
Yeah. He looked like, at least as far as in warfare there, that he would be more effective than a human, except for the fact that he keeps at the drop of a hat turning on his self-destruct mechanism.
I liked that bit, though. That's one of the jokes that I thought worked well.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah. It was really funny. I mean, it was like strained credulity, but it was funny, so it made it worth it.
Yeah.
I really like that. The action, I think, was pretty good, like the whole ice monster in the beginning. And I mean, I thought it was a little ridiculous that the driver of the land speeder isn't better at getting away from those guys, since that seems to have been his job forever.
Right.
But it was pretty cool. And I guess he was saying that where all these ships land, they dump their gray holds out, which I assume means like sewage.
Yeah.
And then it attracts these monsters. But anyway,
that's what I was thinking.
That was a cool moment. And then as far as action goes, I really felt, you know, I was feeling kind of like you, Chris, through this whole thing. Like, yeah, this is pretty good, but it's not as good as I hoped it would be. But then the shootout at the end, I felt myself getting like, oh, wrapped up in it. Like, yeah, this is really cool with IG-88 and I mean, IG-11 and just the whole standoff. And then there were some funny jokes in there. And when they we're like, well, now we got to get the door open. And they both look over at that like mounted laser blaster at the same time. And then you see from inside when the door crashes down, that was pretty cool.
You're like, oh yeah.
And then the funny moments, like the blue guy bounty, I think he's called a myth roll that he captured at the beginning when he was saying, I have to use the vac tube. I mean, I can do it here, but if you've never seen a fledgling mithril evacuate their thorax, you're a lucky guy. That was good.
There was some unintentional humor with that scene too. Did you see the toilet?
Yep.
I laughed out loud. It's got all kinds of attachments and gizmos to it, you know, for all the different species that ride on that ship.
I think it's the first time we've seen a toilet in the Star Wars universe, so I can appreciate that.
That felt like a Hitchhiker's Guide thing almost.
Yeah.
Right out of that.
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that, but it kind of did. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when that, I don't know the guy's name, how to say it at the end. I've read it, but I don't know if it was spoken in the episode. But the one that would say, I have spoken every once in a while.
Yeah.
I like that guy, and I like that line, because it's like, that's all I have to say about that. You can take it or leave it. And the learning to ride the blurg bit was a little silly, but I liked when that guy said, this is a female, all the males are eaten during mating.
Right. I thought the learning to ride bit was a bit silly too, maybe went on a little bit too long. But what bugged me the most about it is the reason he has to do it is because apparently the land is unpassable to where he's going.
Right.
And I'm like, he just arrived there in a spaceship.
He's got a ship, right?
And you know, they can't like get across some rocky terrain without riding these weird two-legged animals. They have the smallest front arms I've ever seen. But I don't know, I'm kind of like, they just wanted to put in it felt like they just wanted to put in some new Star Wars creature that wasn't like a intelligent being, you know? So well,
I think they wanted, because they are modeling it after a Western, it was like the horse riding scene, maybe. I don't know.
Learning to ride a horse. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You have to imagine that they're undetectable to radar that way. See?
Okay. So there's a reason.
Yeah. You got to make up the reason.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Rich, number two.
Number two. Well, we pretty much covered it. It was the tone and style. I wrote down that I really enjoyed the spaghetti Western style. I thought it gave it a nice flavor, you know, especially after what you told us at the beginning of the podcast with 5 years after the fall of the Empire, there's a bunch of lawlessness going on, you know, who's taking care of business as far as, you know, justice. So you hire these guys, they go out there and they take care of business. You know, there's little moments I appreciate it, like when the Mandalorian went into the bar for the first time, he had a little bit of like spaghetti Western lone gunman music in the background, mm-hmm. but it still managed to be a little bit futuristic. So I'm like, hey, they're doing a pretty good job here. The shootout, like you said, totally cool. He had to do the whole horse thing and ride it through what looked an awfully lot like the Southwest U.S. You know, mm-hmm. I enjoyed all that stuff. And they provided it flowed well. And the cool part was you never forgot that it was all in the Star Wars universe, because there was always some reminder there behind that spaghetti Western style and context, especially when we got to the end.
Yeah, that totally was, like just a bloody shootout. What about the special effects? What did you guys think of that?
Yeah, I thought they were really good.
I thought they were okay, actually. One of my points here that I wasn't sure I was going to bring up or not, but I thought many of the effects looked fantastic, but occasionally I wasn't quite on board. I thought near the beginning, when the first land speeder comes up and it's being piloted by a droid, I didn't think that one looked that good for some reason. I don't know what it was. I just didn't buy into it. For some reason, the second one that was all beat up and piloted by that other guy who gets eaten
backfiring.
By that.
Backfiring.
Yeah. I thought that one was fine for some reason. I don't know why. And then when the Mandalorian at one point is walking around one of the locations, the camera pans along and we see one of those little aliens that was hanging out with Jabba in Return of the Jedi cooking, like on a spit. And then there's another one. There's another one in a cage. And
the one that laughed at everyone's misfortune.
Yeah. Apparently they're called Kowakian monkey lizards. I looked that up. But the one in the cage, and I know that it was a Muppet, and I know Star Wars has used Muppets forever since the beginning. I just thought it really looked like a Muppet. I didn't buy it at all for some reason. So
I'm pretty sure that looked exactly like the one in Return of the Jedi, which also looked like a Muppet.
Of course. I know, but it's Return of the Jedi, and I didn't mind Muppets. But now, I guess Muppets can be done really well, but I found it a little bit jarring to have that beside other digital effects.
I'm just saying, I think they probably know that, but they're, you know, it's in the tradition of the series to mix that stuff in.
100%. That's interesting. It's a callback. It's a throwback to the days of Muppetry.
You notice a lot of stuff that's a peripheral, which is cool. I can't do that. Like when I watch it, I'm focused on what they want you to focus on, whatever they're putting in front of your face. So I thought the special effects were pretty good in that respect. Like IG-11. I thought he looked really convincing.
He looked awesome. You know? Yeah. No, I mean that the first land speeder actually kind of popped out as there's something weird about this. Maybe it was the shadow underneath, but I'd say overall it looked pretty great, especially for a TV show. Like I wasn't thinking, oh man, this is like that one deer in Walking Dead or anything like that.
It was semi-transparent. It was so bad.
I mean, it was good for the budget. I think it was amazing.
Yeah, I don't want to complain too much about the effects because I just there was little moments here or there that that jumped out to me that I wasn't quite on board with. I actually don't even think the blue dude at the beginning who he's picking up really even looked that great. It just looked like a guy in a rubber mask.
He looked like a Star Trek character.
Yeah,
he did actually. Yeah, he did actually.
No, but you're right, because, you know, if you can't buy in, if you can't suspend belief because of a couple of errors, then yeah, well, it takes you out of the story. I totally mm-hmm. understand.
And the poor, like the plight of a special effects team is there was probably tons of stuff that we didn't even notice just because it looked so good that it didn't throw us out of it, that they worked like hell on, yeah. you know?
They're like, what about this?
Yeah, what about that? That looked good. Oh, yeah.
Well, oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, it was cool.
Yeah, you're right. You don't notice the stuff that's amazing because it's amazing. And we do have to give credit for that, of course. Like, they've created a whole universe here. And for the most part, it looks incredible.
Yeah. And for me, even the stuff that did kind of pop out a little bit, it didn't ever make me go, oh my God. It was just like, oh yeah, I kind of noticed something there, you know, I don't know.
Sure.
Okay. Where are we? I forget. I'm at that point in my drink that I can't keep
number
track
two.
Anymore. Okay.
All right. Well, I think I'm going to go
it's
next.
Your turn,
and
I want to
talk about IG-11 some more. He is, of course, the same kind of droid as IG-88. Like you said, another character that really intrigued me when I was younger because we didn't know much about him. Bounty hunter robot, which was cool, or droid as they call them in Star Wars, and never really got to see him in action, which was rectified here, of course. And I do think the concept for it was really cool, and it's not something I ever considered before, the way his whole body and head can twist at so many different locations so that he can be looking one way and firing another way, or have one eye go one way and the other go the other way. And just
or firing two ways at once.
Well, two ways at once, of course. Yeah, but just be completely reactive in a really quick way to his environment if he's surrounded or whatever. I think the idea of that is really cool, but on screen, it looked goofy to me. And I don't want to ruin this for anybody, but watching that character walk around with the skinny legs and the arms flailing around, I got this image of Bender from Futurama in my head, and I couldn't shake it. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, nope, this isn't working for me, because it looks like Bender just spinning around with skinny legs, shooting things and looking all every direction.
Expecting
I expected him to
down a beer
and,
or something.
Yeah, take a beer out of his chest and drink it. So I love the idea, and I think IG-11 is cool, but it didn't look right to me. And maybe that's just me, but I don't know. So I hope I didn't ruin that for anybody else, but God, it was weird.
That's really funny. I lapped it up. I thought it was badass. And I like the whole scene between the two of them. And I like that they were trying to work it out really quick. Why don't we both just take half? Okay, that's fine. But I'm going to claim the reputation credits. Can we talk about this later? Like all of that.
Yeah really everything well. Else about it and their interactions I thought were great. And like we were saying, there was a couple moments of humor, but they worked together well and stuff, and everything was amazing. It's just the
movie.
I don't know, the character design sort of, but it's not that, because I think the robot is a very cool robot. It's just the way he moved is what got to me a little bit.
The physics, huh?
Kind of the physics of it, sort of. Yeah. But then if I can take the next step here, the one thing I did really wonder about is, of course, at the end, the Mandalorian shoots him in the head, kills him, and that got me wondering, are there going to be consequences for this? Because as far as we're led to believe, they're in the same guild of bounty hunters, right? They are both there doing, well, after the same target, but I feel like there's a code amongst these people, and killing someone, you know, in your guild or whatever is probably not cool. So I'm wondering how that's going to play out. And that's got me interested for sure.
I with you 100% on that one. I saw when that happened, when the droid hit the ground with a hole in his head, I was like, what the hell? What do you do that for?
Yeah, exactly.
What's no trust within the guild?
One thing that mitigates that a little bit was that he was so ready to kill himself like three or four times.
Oh yeah,
it's I mean, it's still an issue, but I mean, I think the benefit of being an IG bounty hunter droid is that you can move around like that and shoot in several directions at once and see everywhere and be dexterous and all that, even though it looks goofy. Yeah. But also that you don't have any concern maybe for your own life, that like you can go into situations that are super high risk, because if it goes wrong, you can just self-destruct because you're just a droid. So that sort of gave the feeling that it wasn't that as important as if maybe, you know, one of the other bounty hunters from Empire had been standing next to him.
Sure.
But still, it's, yeah, I think, I mean, Rich, you questioned earlier if they both had the same guy who hired them. And it wasn't right. clear, because when the Mandalorian went to get that assignment and this guy who's just known as the client was there with Dr. Pershing, and Dr. Pershing really wanted to make sure that the Mandalorian brought back quote unquote the asset alive, but the guy hiring him said you can bring him, just bring proof of his termination and you'll make less money, but it'll still, you know, count. And the doctor yeah. was upset about that. So I could see maybe that the same guy hired him, but if you believe IG-11, the guy said no, make sure he's dead. So maybe it was somebody else. Yeah, you know, we just don't know yeah. right now.
I wonder why the Mandalorian doesn't like droids. I mean, that droid certainly helped him out. I don't think he would have made it in there without IG-11.
Well, he's worried about him taking his job, right? No one wants to be replaced by a robot.
Well, he
maybe
said
they're too corruptible.
I yeah. mean, he seemed to like that droid better than anyone else, because he said you're not so bad for a droid.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Maybe the writers don't like droids.
Well, so, yeah, so we see that he gets that land speeder, came up to take him to the shipyard, and it had what looked like an R2 unit driving it. And I just thought about my Tesla with autopilot and how a lot of people don't trust those things. Like, it's a little more, I mean, this goes back to the scene in the cantina in Star Wars when C-3PO and R2-D2 follow Luke in and they go, oh, we don't serve their kind here. So I think that's right. the idea that there's just a distrust of droids for some reason. And maybe it is because they might have been, you know, programmed by an enemy, or who knows. I don't know if we've ever really had that question answered. But I think it's really interesting to give the Mandalorian that character trait that he doesn't like droids, and maybe we'll find out why. I like it because yeah. it just also maybe points to that Star Wars isn't going to be, or that the Mandalorian isn't going to use cute droids as a crutch like other Star Wars things maybe have done.
Wait a minute. You have a Tesla?
Yeah, I got a Model 3.
Oh, cool, man. So you basically have a droid for a car. That's awesome.
I love it. Yeah, I've had it for about a year.
Oh, dude,
it doesn't.
I gotta come
or
out there and
or anything.
Check it out. Oh,
or tell me the odds.
Yeah. It's fast too.
You don't want your car to tell you the odds. No,
never. Okay, my number two is the character of the Mandalorian, who is really interesting. I think he's this great mysterious anti-hero. He's a gunslinger. One thing that I was sort of questioning as I was watching is, they have this mask on him all the time. And given how in superhero movies, they'll lately use any excuse to have them take off their masks just so we can see them emote and feel connected to the character. Is this the right move? I've seen some complaints from people already that don't like that he never takes it off. I bet he will at some point, because we know who's underneath the mask, right? It's Pedro Pascal, who played Oberyn in Game of Thrones. And he's super charismatic. But I don't know, at least for now, I kind of like that he's faceless and nameless and he's just this kind of a mystery character. I don't think that would hold up over the course of a whole series, but for now, it's kind of fun, just the coolness of it. What do you guys think about that? Not never taking off the mask.
Oh, I got a lot to say about that.
Okay.
Well, I hope they leave it on for a while, but eventually I think it should. I think it would be okay if it comes off eventually, because like you said, there's a good actor underneath there. I'm not one of those people that thinks that you have to get the mask off as soon as possible so
Me
that
neither.
You can see the actor's face.
I don't either. I think, you know, I hate it when Spider-Man's mask just like flies off for no reason.
That's exactly what I was going to say. In the Spider-Man movies, there's like any excuse possible to get the mask off, right?
Yeah.
And then Disney solved that with nanotechnology so it can form around his head at any second. But
right.
I think with The Mandalorian, it's fine to leave it on for a while. I wouldn't be surprised if we go through most of the first season with it on, and maybe towards the end they take it off.
Yeah. It's a bold move, actually, to leave it on.
It is a bold move. Yeah, 100%. But it's an iconic helmet, and it's not like, I don't feel like we're losing anything, certainly not yet, by not seeing his real face.
I mean, we may be gaining something because it makes people like go, oh, wow, they're doing that, you know? Like,
yeah, 100%.
Interesting. Something else about the character that you wonder is his morality. We've touched on it, but, you know, his job is to go around and pick up smugglers and bail jumpers, criminals. So actually, yeah, it seems like he's a lawman almost. He's a mercenary, but and we saw him kill everyone, or not everyone, a bunch of people in that bar that he was in at first, and then pretty much everyone at this outpost at the end. But it seemed like they're all rascals and scoundrels, but still, you know, he doesn't know for sure. He's just going around killing people. So I think they're painting him as an anti-hero, especially at the end when he took out IG-11. I mean, Rich, you were like, why did he have to take out IG-11? Well, it was because it was either him or Baby Yoda. He had to choose because IG-11 was about to kill him. So that's why he did it.
Is he going to be kicked out of the guild now for that?
He might. Yeah, there might be consequences.
He's gonna be a dark horse in the guild.
But it also might have just been because his employer said he would get more money for saving the baby. So we don't even know for sure if he did that out of any kind of a warmth or just a practicality. Right. But I feel like it was warmth, especially with the E.T. thing.
Sure, but you know what? Remember, at the beginning in the bar, he cut a dude in half with the door.
Right.
That's pretty dark, man.
Yeah.
It also makes me think that these Star Wars doors should probably have some sort of safety feature so that they don't do that. But
like our garage doors,
yeah. Right, exactly. But he did shoot the control panel, so maybe the door was malfunctioning.
My garage door actually chopped my first child in half several years ago. So, yeah.
What?
You gotta watch out for that. I'm just kidding.
Dude.
So, I'm sorry, Rich, what were you saying?
Oh, your kids are going to listen to the show, you know. I was saying the Mandalorian hasn't shot first, right? Not yet. I mean, everybody was picking fights with him, so he just took him out.
I guess you're right, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big thing with Star Wars fans, man, who shot first.
I mean, right? Didn't he shoot his, like, grappling hook thing or whatever it is at the one guy who was just trying to run away and drag him back into the door to chop him in half, though?
He did, but that was the guy that he was already fighting with at the bar, I think. Yeah. He took the other guy out. That dude tried to run away, and you're right. He pulled him into the door of death.
I guess my point is there's a difference between defending yourself from someone and killing someone who's running away from you that tried to hurt you.
I guess
maybe it was an accident.
I mean, it does seem like Boba Fett, you could pretty much say, is just a bad guy. He's out for himself. You can't trust him. He's dangerous. With the Mandalorian, I'd say the jury's out. He may have a good heart for people that he considers to be innocent or, you know, worth saving.
I agree with that. He will be a deeper character than Boba Fett. If for no other reason than we're getting 8 episodes of, you know, 45 minutes each. So lots of screen time and lots of time to develop them. Whereas Boba Fett appeared for what, like less than 10 minutes of screen time across 3 movies. So
exactly. We're going to get to know his dispensing of personal justice.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's the other thing is, I mean, you kind of need it. Like, I don't know if you can sustain a whole series. I mean, we've got Breaking Bad, so you never know. But I feel like with a Disney show, we saw a flashback to his childhood where he's a foundling, whatever that means. That sounds kind of like an orphan to me, maybe. And he's, you know, in this war-torn area being carried and then left somewhere underground for safety. And then when he goes to get his, what's that steel called? Beskar or something?
Beskar, yeah.
made into a piece of armor and there's some of it left over. And the blacksmith says, very generous of you, this will help a lot of other foundlings. So he's trying to help other kids that had the same experience as him, it seems like. So he's a generous person to the innocent, it seems like.
Right.
Yeah. And speaking of that, one last thing, just while I'm on the character of the Mandalorian, we've seen this symbol. It's new to me. I'm sure Star Wars fans who are deep into the mythology know it, but it's this animal slash creature skull with tusks. And on the Star Wars site, it says the origins are obscure. Some say it's a bantha skull, but it doesn't look like the right shape. Some say it's an homage to an ancient Mandalorian training master. Some say it's the skull of the ancient mythosaur, who were city-sized reptiles that dominated the surface of early Mandalore. And later, the guy who always says, I have spoken, says, come on, your ancestors rode the great mythosaur. So maybe that's what they're going with here.
Mythosaur, yeah, that's kind of a funny name, but
I know.
I'll let it go.
It's a little on the nose.
A little bit, yeah.
All right, Rich, number one.
Well, again, we already pretty much covered it. I wrote down right here, the Mandalorian is a badass, and his helmet stays on. That's exactly what I wrote. But yeah, that's one of my favorite pieces, is that his helmet stays on through the whole episode, and I personally hope it stays on through the whole series. I don't need to see his face.
Ever.
It's always been a thing with me, though. I know that I'm in the minority with this opinion, but I like to watch the title character doing his or her thing in full costume. That's just me. I've been like that since I was a kid. I remember, you know, I used to get so mad when Batman took off his mask to be Bruce Wayne in character development, Captain America took off his mask to be Steve Rogers. I would just get so frustrated. I was like, no, put the mask back on and kick some butt. So I think good writing and acting can still do justice to the character. You don't necessarily have to see their face. It just might take a little longer to develop the character. But hey, we got, like Chris said, 8 episodes of 45 minutes. We'll get there. Patience, young Padawan.
There you go. Yeah. Well, listen, man, I hate to say this, but apparently, and sorry if I'm scooping you here, Jason. The Mandalorian's real name has already been revealed officially.
Oh, don't say it. Don't say it.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it. Yeah. I'm not going to say it. Okay. I honestly don't really want to know either. But news came out today that his real name was revealed. And I'm like, well, if they're going to do that,
it's
then
Boba Fett.
Just they're probably going to take his helmet off sooner than we think.
Yeah. I think.
You know? Yeah. Sorry.
I would be ready for it just in case. Yeah. Maybe in the last episode of the season.
Well, that would be fine with me.
Get what I want with that one.
That's what I was getting at. Like, leave it till the end and make that part of, like, a big reveal at the end, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can wait that long.
You know what movie did that? It was Dredd. 2012, the remake of Judge Dredd was just Dredd. That guy left his helmet on the entire movie. In fact, I remember I watched it and I was like, that was great. And then I replay it in my head a few times, and then like a month later I was like, hey, wait a minute, I wonder who that actor was. So I went and looked it up, and it was Carl Urban, but I was like, hey, I didn't need to know who that was. They did a good job.
Yeah, and then Carl Urban, he's great. So it's interesting. Yeah. So is Pedro Pascal. And to take a job like this where you never get to see your face, that might be tough for an actor to accept.
Sure, yeah. they make their living with their faces pretty much. So
did you guys see The Boys, by the way?
Have not watched it yet.
You gotta watch that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's another one where they stayed in their suits the whole time too.
Yeah.
Well, it's on my list.
Okay, Chris, number one.
Well, you know what, guys? We've covered almost everything I wanted to talk about. The effects, IG-88, Baby Yoda, and so on. So I guess the last thing is more about the sort of history and the backstory of this character, the Mandalorian. You know, we got a little bit when he had that piece of metal forged into the new shoulder plate, which I thought was actually really cool. There's this special metal that they melt down and make the armor out of. That was pretty fun. I liked seeing that. And he had these flashes to when he was a child and some of that stuff. So I really kind of just wonder how much more of that we're going to get. And if you guys think that every episode there's going to be a little bit more revealed about what made him what he is today, which I think could be really interesting. So I kind of look forward to it, but what do you guys think? Are we going to get some of that every episode?
Yeah, we're going to have to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they're going to build the character, especially when they keep mentioning little things, little quote unquote things like the Great Purge. I mean, come on, you got to address that, right?
That's true. It was great after all, so we need to know more about that.
Actually, yeah, that part I'm kind of worried about because it could be really, I don't know, uninteresting to me. Just, okay, so he's an orphan that his parents died in a war. I mean, I hate to sound callous, but it just seems kind of...
cookie cutter?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Been there, done that, kind of.
Yeah. You know, cookie cutter, seen, but backstory, yeah.
Right. We've seen characters like this a million times, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think what they'll probably want to do is to have us feel connected to him as a character, because, as a person, because as it is right now, he's just this cool figure that goes around doing badass things, but we don't really feel like he's a person. And so if they really... I'm almost like on your side, Rich. I'd almost rather just see him being a badass and not worry about that kind of stuff. But I think that, especially because we did see those flashbacks and it's a series, and they're going to want us to feel connected to him. So they're probably going to delve into that story. And so I hope that they can do it in a way that feels interesting and not just been there, done that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We do have more characters to be introduced to that we haven't seen in this episode. So, you know, if they spread that around a little bit, it doesn't, you know, it's not necessary for this show to just have one central character that's the most interesting. A good ensemble cast, I really, really appreciate on any show. So if they do a little bit of Mandalorian backstory, but everyone else is just as interesting and fun to watch, it might balance out pretty well.
So it doesn't all hinge on him. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, because we got Giancarlo Esposito coming up.
Well, exactly. And he's amazing and everything, right? So,
yeah. And you mentioned Ash, like we got Pablo and Kelly and Chet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All great characters.
I was thinking, you know, since you brought up that, and that's where some people listening to this know that Rich and Chris and I did the Evil Dead cast for Ash vs. Evil Dead. We were all devastated when it ended, but that was a much different show, much more adult, like probably the most adult show I've ever seen in some ways.
Oh yeah.
I can't even describe some of the things we saw, because I might have to mark this podcast as explicit, but I was thinking maybe we would try not to have this as explicit for now.
Okay. Since good to know. You should have said that off the top.
Yeah. I think
this is our cautious introduction.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I don't know, I mean, it's up to you guys. You just start swearing up a storm right now.
No, come on. It's Star Wars. I always think it's a good idea to keep your language similar to what is used in the show you're covering, right?
Yeah.
So if they're swearing in the show, go for it. Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. Heck a yes.
Right. Hey,
yeah,
and
I agree.
If they introduce any, you know, Star Wars profanity, then we can go with that.
Start using their words, huh? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
you would think they would in this show. Okay, is my turn?
Yeah.
Number one, references and lore, which we've already covered a lot. I think it's fun that in some ways this super cool, gritty show has its roots in the Star Wars Holiday Special, where that was Boba Fett's first appearance. And also the blue guy mentioned that he was hoping to be free for Life Day, which also came from that. That's what they were going to celebrate in that Star Wars Holiday Special, this Wookiee holiday.
Oh, that came from the special, really?
Yeah.
I kind of want to watch the special now.
I know. We should watch it again.
I can't remember how bad it was.
The Beskar steel, they did a great job of making that seem like such a valuable substance, because that was what the guy who... paid him in Beskar steel. Yeah. And somebody had asked him, I think one of the guy in the bar had asked him if his armor was Beskar steel. So I looked it up, and it's an alloy used in Mandalorian armor, notable for its high tolerance to extreme forms of damage. The metal was durable enough to withstand a direct blaster shot and could potentially withstand the slash or glancing blow of a lightsaber. though, could be penetrated with a direct stab. Yeah, which sort of goes along with the idea that their weapons and armor and tactics developed as a response to how to fight Jedi.
Yeah, totally. That explains a lot.
That's cool. I'm glad that that exists, actually, because lightsabers are such a powerful weapon, right?
Yeah,
so, right.
You know, a glancing blow might not carve his arm off, which is awesome.
Right.
I like
that.
You
gotta have an equalizer there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just getting into this, I think it'll be a real shame if we don't see him fight a Jedi at some point.
Agreed.
And apparently, John Favreau listening? Put in a Jedi.
Apparently, this substance, Beskar steel, comes up in the Clone Wars and Rebels sometimes as part, you know, plot points and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I watch like half of that, and I want to go back and watch the whole thing. When the Mandalorian talks to the blacksmith, she mentioned that the metal was recovered during the Great Purge. That could be reference the Empire's occupation of Mandalore, or something to do with the Order 66, the massacre of the Jedis carried out by the Empire, or something else that we don't know about yet. Probably something else, huh? It's like another mystery that the show brought up. But anyway, she also suggests making a pauldron from that Beskar,
and
that's a component of plate armor that covers the shoulder area, which we saw in the show.
Yeah,
but I never heard that word before.
And then she said something about a like a symbol or a signet. Signet. She said something about, have you gotten your signet yet? Yeah,
like maybe he will get his own specific symbol or something.
Right, but I mean, he shot
his logo.
IG-11. What the hell? I don't think he's going to be in the guild anymore. Oh, wait, that was his tribe, not his guild, huh?
Yeah, that's different. So this guy, Carl Weathers, played Greef Karga, who's the head of the Bounty Hunters Guild and who the Mandalorian may be in hot water with now.
Yeah, all right, that's two different groups. Gotcha.
I guess. And the client, played by Werner Herzog, uses Imperial stormtroopers as bodyguards. Do you think they were former stormtroopers who are now mercenaries, or what do you guys think?
I don't know. It might just be the armor.
Yeah, right.
No, I think they are former stormtroopers who, you know, the Empire fell and splintered off into... Yeah, they need work. They splintered off into private security, basically.
Yeah.
I think that's a really cool thing. And it was fun to see like stormtroopers that weren't all polished white, you know, dirty and gritty. It was great.
They saw some action. That's a great point. There's probably tens of millions of stormtroopers because they're all clones, like we mentioned before, right? So, yeah, what are they going to do?
I'm not sure they're clones. I wonder about that. I know the clone troopers were clones in the Clone Wars, but then the stormtroopers may have been some clones and some just recruits. But they may be all clones. Really? I don't know. Like when Princess Leia says, you're a little short for a stormtrooper, maybe that's because they're all clones.
Yeah, but we know that Finn was like raised to be a stormtrooper before he rebels, right? But that doesn't mean he wasn't, you know, created as a clone too. So I don't know.
But but the clone troopers all seem to be based on Boba Fett.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple more things about lore. We see Jawas on the planet where the Bounty Hunter Guild is.
Yeah.
That was cool. And then just some like callback things like that I feel like are, I mean, Star Wars has always been known, as George Lucas says, it's like poems, they rhyme and, you know, little echoes of different things. And I think that carries through here. Like, you know, I mentioned Jon Favreau, like the cantina scene and wanted to have that same vibe. And so, you know, what I remember about the cantina scene that I thought was shocking at the time is when Obi-Wan Kenobi cuts off that dude's alien's arm that was harassing Luke. I thought, man, that was brutal. So when the Mandalorian chops the guy in half with the door, I feel like that was sort of a similar thing, you know, bad shit happens here.
I can see that.
And then when the Mandalorian's looking through his scope, seeing those two-legged creatures, and then one jumps up right in front of him, that reminded me of when Luke was looking for the sand people.
Yeah, there's a lot of callbacks, huh?
Yeah. The people encased in carbonite. Now, at first, I was like, wait a minute. I remember in Empire, they weren't sure how the carbonite was. I mean, it was I'm getting super nerdy here, but it was originally intended for Luke to be encased in carbonite on Cloud City, but then they did it. Luke got away, so they put Han in there. But that wasn't what it was for. It was for freezing gas, because Cloud City was a gas mining operation. So now we see the Mandalorian has all these bounties that he's collected encased in carbonite. And I'm like, that's not what it was for. But maybe after it worked with Han Solo, they just started using it for that. That's my explanation for it.
Yeah, and it's a little bit later, right? So they've perfected the technology for human carbonite freezing, right?
I thought it was a crack up. I had like four or five of them, kind of like, you know, books on a shelf. Right?
Yeah, I liked that too. But was the first one looked like it was Greedo in carbonite, or at least a Greedo species person.
Species guy.
I feel like that was a bit of a callback too. Yeah.
Right. What else? When Dr. Pershing says, you know, the guy who's hiring the Mandalorian says, you can bring back proof you terminated the asset. Dr. Pershing says, that's not what we agreed upon. That reminded me of Lando Calrissian.
Mm.
Pray we don't alter the deal any further.
That's right.
I guess that's about it. I was also going to mention that Kowakian monkey lizard. Yeah. I loved seeing him on that skewer, because you just remember him being so annoying when he was laughing at everybody.
You kind of hope it's the same one.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, any other notes, Rich or Chris?
Yeah, I had I got a little bit of a giggle when we went into the Mandalorian's tribe and you saw these little tiny kid Mandalorians running around with their masks on. I thought that was pretty funny.
I didn't even notice that.
Geez, when do they put those helmets on? Right after birth?
It's funny. I noticed the kids, and I was a little surprised to see kids, but I thought they were running like away from the camera, and I didn't realize they had the helmets on. Funny.
I thought they did, but then again, I only watched it once.
It's interesting. Well, because at some point, I think it's the blue guy says, is it true you guys never take your masks off? And he just ignores him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? And there was another joke about the helmet, too, when he was learning to ride the thing. The Nick Nolte character, that guy said maybe it would be easier if you took your helmet off.
Yeah, I love that, because that's a thing and they're going to joke about it and touch on it. And I totally did not realize that was the Nick Nolte character. Cool.
Yeah, Nick Nolte.
I know,
the name is K-U-I-L-L, so Quill, maybe?
Quill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What else, Rich?
You know, I read today that some people thought they saw Boba Fett in the background of the Mandalorian cave tribe area. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Hard to say when everybody has the same helmet on.
Right, exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
You know, that explains something, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, but I was looking up the Boba Fett character in the wiki. I think it was on Wikipedia, which is a great resource, by the way. And it said his most recent appearance was in The Mandalorian Season 1, Episode 1.
Really?
Mm. So somebody might have just put that in there. You know, you can edit those pages.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Hmm.
He got out of the Sarlacc pit.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess it would be cool if he came back.
I feel like I never wanted that to be true.
Raise a lot of questions. Huh?
Well, I'm convinced that he did get out and he survived, but I don't think I want him on this show. You know what I mean? Like, this is a show about a different Mandalorian, and we have plenty of story here, as far as I can tell. So we don't need Boba Fett confusing everything. If he's just standing around in the background of one shot, that's totally fine.
That could be cool.
You know, yeah. It's like when you see the Millennium Falcon in, I don't know, Rogue One, or maybe that sort of just part of a fleet somewhere. I forget if that's the one, but, you know, it's not part of the movie. It's just there.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I had heard a rumor before like a week ago, that Disney had been keeping it a secret that The Mandalorian was actually going to be a show about Boba Fett. So I was waiting to see if that was true, but I don't think it is. And I'm glad.
Yeah. Agreed. Mm.
Anything else?
I got a kick out of the giant walrus. I don't know. It kind of looked like a giant walrus / crocodile monster at the beginning. That when the guy said stay off the ice and it came out and grabbed the ship. I like monsters. Godzilla is one of my favorite movies. So I'd like to see some more of that. That'd be cool.
And that's another sort of, it's in the tradition of Star Wars, like the Sarlacc, the Sarlacc, the Rancor monster in the Jedi, Jabba's dungeon with Luke. Yeah. And then what else?
The giant worm that comes out of the asteroid and swallows the Millennium Falcon. That
yep.
was cool.
Yep.
That's the one I think of when I think of giant Star Wars monsters. Or there's a couple of giant...
Force Awakens.
In Force Awakens, yeah. A couple of giant monsters in that. And then Han is moving big, gross tentacle monsters in the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
God, why can't I think of the name now?
Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi,
I forget
yes.
that too.
Yeah. So Star Wars does big giant monsters pretty well. And it seems like they got to include one in every movie or every.
Yeah, talking about it, it's got a lot of my favorite things, man. Monsters, the helmet is staying on.
Right.
Gunfights. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm getting kind of more excited about this.
Me too. The more I think about it, the more I like it.
Amazing.
Okay. Anything else, Rich?
I have exhausted my notes.
Chris?
You know, the only other note I have is I did think it was sort of funny at the beginning in the opening scene before the Mandalorian even comes into the bar. Those guys that are harassing the guy with the blue mask on, they were harassing him about his like scent glands or something. And they were, it felt yeah. like they were going to harvest them from him for something.
Musk.
And yeah, for Musk. And I'm like, God, do they have to murder him for that? Or can they do right. something that doesn't kill him? I don't know.
Or just maim him.
Or just maim him. Yeah. Either way, though. Pretty bad. So
yeah. I don't want my glands though. Harvested for Musk.
No, definitely not.
I don't think.
No.
Musk doesn't even smell good either.
The only one I have that's left is that I thought, it was pretty plot convenient that they didn't have one of those holographic bounty pucks to show him who he was supposed to get at the very end, and that was just to keep it a surprise for us. You know,
50-year-old,
we can't show his picture.
No. Last known location and age. Good luck.
Yeah. But that's fine.
It was good to see Apollo Creed. I hadn't seen him in a long time either.
Yeah. He was pretty good too.
Forgot his name. What's the actor's name?
Carl Weathers.
Carl Weathers. Yeah, thank you. It was good to see him. I like those old 80s muscle-bound stars.
Yeah, he was good for that role. It's good that Nick Nolte's not too drunk to do a role, too.
Oh, man, I'm surprised he's still alive, and it's nice to see him.
No kidding, huh? Yeah.
All right, awesome. We'll take a little break, but there's more to come, so stay with us. My life is ill, son. Prepared to kill, son. Paradox of pain, baby, is real, son. Lonely traveler, ain't trying to bow to you. But if you're feeling tough, dog, I walk up all challenges. Ain't got no family, you see there's one of me. Might lose your post, standing 2 feet in front of me. I'm pissed at the world, but I ain't looking for trouble. I might crack a grin, I ain't looking to hug you. Think about it, nobody wants to die. There's rule to this game, son, I'm justified. I'm ready to go, partner, hey. I'm on the run, the devil's hugging on my boots, that's why I own the gun. This journey's too long, I'm looking for some answers. So much time stressing, I forget the questions. I fear no man, you don't want no problems. B, eyes in the back of my head, you better not follow me. On this lonely road, trying to make it home. Doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, who wants some? I'm fighting for my soul, gotta get you. Alright, back, it's time for news about The Mandalorian. Collider had an interview with Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, who's his co-showrunner, and he's been involved with Star Wars for a while, especially the animated series, The Clone Wars, and he headed up Rebels. And he's like the font of Star Wars knowledge and continuity and making sure that it feels like Star Wars. You know, I think that's where he compliments Jon Favreau really well. But anyways, they ask, this is the first live-action Star Wars television show. John and Dave, what was so appealing about that for you? John says, for me, as somebody who grew up with Star Wars and really having been formed around what I experienced when I was little with the first film, there was some aesthetic to it that I really gravitated to. My whole taste in movies was probably formed in a big way from seeing George Lucas's original film. I learned about cinema through the lens of that film. My father would explain to me, this is a lot like samurai movies, or this is a lot like westerns, or this is a lot like World War II films. And so that became my inroad. And then there was The Power of Myth with Joseph Campbell and Bill Moyers that was filmed up at the ranch and that opened me up to mythic structure and my understanding of mythology and storytelling. And so to come back and return to this with the freedom that this new platform affords, because there's nothing to compare it to, nothing else has been on TV other than the holiday special, the idea of telling the story over more than just a couple of hours, told every few years, opens us over a few years. That means what? Anyway, opens us up to this novelization of story and a return back to the roots in many ways of the Saturday afternoon serial films that my parents' generation grew up with. Drawing from that type of style, storytelling lends itself really well to what we're tackling here. It's funny not to have a preciousness in the way that we're telling the stories, because we're coming back to you next week with another one to engage the audience in the way that I enjoy being engaged, with a bigger budget and a lot of the qualities and aesthetics of a film. But the novelization of a serialized storytelling is where it really opens up a lot of freedom and opportunity, where we don't feel like we're repeating or copying anything else that people have experienced with Star Wars.
I think what he means is, with the movies, you just see, you know, a few select hours cut out of years of time. So with a TV show, we get a lot more of the of just the events that take place over a shorter time period. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of do more with it.
More, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, yeah, first time.
And a bigger budget.
Yeah. Dave Filoni says it's exciting for me because I get to be a part of it. As a kid growing up, I would watch Star Wars every week. And as television got more and more genre over the years, I remember when Star Trek The Next Generation came out with a promise of better visual effects on television, and it took big leaps. As somebody that's always been into fantasy and science fiction, you were always waiting for a moment where you thought that the images on television were as good as what you were seeing in the theater. But there was a big separation when I was a kid. Now it's gotten so close. We can make something like Star Wars because the technology has advanced. That's one of the dreams that George Lucas had. Even when I worked with him on Clone Wars, he would talk about the future being streaming and the future being episodic, serialized Star Wars. And then he sold it for $4 billion. And so now I get to do it. I'm just kidding.
Yep.
So then they ask Pedro Pascal, for the actors, what was the moment that you realized I'm truly in the Star Wars universe? And Pedro Pascal, who plays the Mandalorian, says, well, putting the helmet on, for sure. They had it handy in our first meeting to see if it would fit, and it fit perfectly. Very simply, trying the costume on for the first time and looking in the mirror, you can't see very well with a helmet, but I got a pretty clear impression of it. If you grew up playing with Star Wars toys and seeing the movies, and then you're staring at yourself and you are the image of that childhood imagination, it's a super pinch me moment.
Yeah, can you guys imagine what that would feel like to have grown up watching these movies and then as an adult be in them, or be right. A character that is as cool as this one?
I know.
Or God, be any character in Star Wars? That just
yeah,
must
just be involved, yeah.
Yeah, it just must be such a trip, you know, to be a huge fan and then be a part of it.
Right.
There's that video of what's-his-face who plays Finn watching the trailer, or maybe some footage of him in the movie, and he's in there with his family and he's watching it, but we're watching him watch it. And the way he just freaks out when the scene comes where he lights a lightsaber for the first time and stuff like that. I got the feeling that, you know, or I could see on his face the feeling that we would all have. It was so cool.
Yeah. That's cool.
Well, we're doing a podcast. That's as close as we're going to get.
Hey, man, that's not bad.
It's pretty fun. And then last here, Disney announced that Disney Plus had signed up over 10 million users in just one day since launching a couple days ago, Tuesday.
Damn.
So,
well, that's pretty big. There's three of them right here.
Yep. Yeah. An analyst had projected that they would get 8 million by the end of 2019, so... Whoa. They're doing better than people thought. I mean, I was thinking it would probably be huge just because of all the amazing properties that Disney owns now.
Yeah. Yeah, they own so much. Did you guys have any trouble downloading the app?
No, I didn't. Everything worked. Actually, I had one problem, but it was minor. I signed up and I downloaded the app on my TV. I have a smart TV, and it downloaded fine. But I couldn't immediately log in. It took a little while later in the day before I could properly log in.
Mm.
on day
one. Mine did. We tried to download it, and then it took about 5 minutes. It was like we were in a queue line, you know, and then it started downloading. But it worked fine.
I heard people had problems earlier in the day. By the time I got around to it, it was pretty smooth. And then when we were watching a few things, it took a little while for it to get started, but mostly it was totally fine. So did you guys look around a little bit and explore and watch anything else?
My girls did. They've been watching it since we got it nonstop.
I poked around a little bit. I've seen all the Marvel movies. I've seen all the Star Wars movies. That's not to say I won't watch them again, but they're there. I watched a little bit of old Simpsons because all the seasons of the Simpsons are there.
Wow.
But I haven't really dug into it too much yet.
I was glad to see they had some National Geographic on there too. I like National Geographic.
That's a good point. I think some of that could be pretty interesting too, because they make good stuff.
Yeah. So next we'll be covering The Simpsons episode by episode. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my gosh. Talk about job security.
Yeah, really.
Freaking 30-year show. I watched The Little Mermaid, which I loved, and Nico would not sit for it. He freaking hates it because it's got a girl in it, but Bodhi loved it.
Oh, good.
And then I went back and watched some of like the original Steamboat Willie, Mickey Mouse shorts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, I did put on a couple of the Pixar shorts that they always play before their new films. There's a few of those that are really good.
Yeah.
And I could see my kids being into the High School Musical series that they have on there. But
yeah.
They haven't watched it yet.
Found it
yet.
That was a big one. My girls watched all of the Hannah Montana stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some Marvel shows coming up over the next few years. I'm looking forward to the What If cartoon, which is like the Marvel What If comic book where they explore other possibilities. And they got all the same actors from the movies, but it's cartoon. And the Watcher is like the host and everything.
Mm-hmm. And they're doing a Scarlet Witch show too.
I'm looking forward to that one too. That's the other one. WandaVision. Yeah. Because I think it's going to be based on this Vision comic that came out a couple of years ago that was like a Twilight Zone episode or something.
Cool.
So that'll be cool. Good. But did you know, Rich, that there's a Hawkeye show with Jeremy Renner?
No kidding, really?
Coming up. Me and Rich went to high school with him. He was in our seventh grade.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I heard that he was having some trouble at home.
I know. Like some crazy woman he married or something.
Yeah, it must be a full-fledged A-list actor now.
That's
if he's getting into trouble at home.
All right, let's get in some listener feedback.
Pake Allen says, absolutely loved it. I was just excited to be in the Star Wars world at all, but this is great. The acting, the character design, the action, and humor are all perfect for a premiere. I can't wait to see where this goes.
Very cool. I can't wait as well. Alicia Stout wrote, I freaking loved it. From the Star Wars nostalgia, speed racers, to the amazing graphics, humor, bounty droid, and the end, holy wow. So glad I caved in and subscribed to Disney Plus.
Josh Troyer says, I watched it twice, once on my phone and once on my TV. The visuals are amazing. Story building makes me want more.
Ian Fultz says, music was weak, but other than that, brilliant start and quite the mystery setup.
I like
I don't agree with that the music was weak. I think the soundtrack was pretty cool.
Yeah, I bet you Ian Fultz is a huge John Williams fan. Yeah.
The big horn fanfare.
Yeah.
That's true. There was none of that, but it was different, and I think different in a good way.
Yeah, I do too. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Barry Evitz writes, I liked it overall, although some elements of the show are going to need time to develop. The plot is interesting, and the closing scene has me intrigued for the possibilities for where the story is going. I loved that it is set post-Empire and prior to the First Order. It's a time frame that we haven't really explored in the Star Wars universe yet. Given that the Empire is done, I was intrigued by the presence of the Stormtroopers, definitely waiting to see where this story is headed and looking forward to hearing your thoughts on the podcast.
Right on.
Thank you. Casey Robertson says, loved it. Really enjoyed Filoni's Western feel. Felt a little choppy at the beginning, but that final battle and then the final scene. On a side note, did anyone see some resemblance to Serenity with his ship?
Oh, it's the two engines at the back, off the sides,
is
right?
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah, it's a little bit similar, but the body shape is very different. But I know I can see what Casey is saying.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I was just, when I read this, I looked at the body shape and I'm like, well, the Serenity ship is shaped like a Firefly, so I didn't get it. But then when you mentioned the two engines, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Jamie Dimmock writes, the whole episode was great, but that last fight and the very end have me totally hooked.
Cool. Damien Vitale says, something about stories in the Star Wars universe that gives me chills. It was very good. Won't give spoilers, but I saw lots of Easter eggs and familiar Star Wars stuff. I'll definitely listen to your take and see if you all picked up on the things I did.
Michael Darwin says, I like that it was kid-friendly without pandering. Very well said. Like Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, lots, which I feel like is a little subtle shade at Return of the Jedi there. Lots of nice detail, like the dirty stormtroopers, and a solid blend of practical and CGI effects. I'm hoping they keep Force users and familiar faces away for a while and let the show be its own thing. I have spoken.
Ewoks. Michael's talking about Ewoks.
Bianx Vargas writes, I want a doll of that baby.
And you know what? I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to buy one before you know it.
You will. Probably you could even go to Amazon and get it right now, I bet.
I bet you can.
And then we have one call this week from our good friend, Steve Brown.
Hey guys, this is Steve, and I am been so excited about this series. I just watched it for the first time, the first episode, and just loved it. That reveal at the end when you see a little green hand coming out and you're like, it was amazing, because I don't think we ever knew it, or at least I don't follow besides the movies. So I don't know any of the mythology or the backstory or any of the other stuff about Yoda's race and all that. So seeing that little green hand poking out of there and was just amazing to me. Absolutely love what they've done. I can't wait to watch it again, but I wanted to send this to you guys because I'm so excited, not just for the show, but to hear you guys back again. And since Ash versus Evil Dead, and I've been chomping at the bit to hear you guys podcast again, so I can't wait to hear your thoughts on The Mandalorian. So many things to talk about, but I just want to give a huge shout out to Ryan Posehn. He's the guy driving the speeder at the beginning of the show. I did not know he was going to be on that, and so as soon as I saw him, I was like, that's Brian, that's who, I can't remember his name, it's somebody. And so I had to wait till the end and see the credits and go, Brian Posehn. So anyway, just super excited. Can't wait to hear what you guys thought of this, the first episode, and can't wait to go along with you on this just amazing ride. Talk to you later.
Good to have you along. I thought he was going to say that was like his best buddy or something.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, you know, the blue alien at the beginning was Horatio Sanz, right?
No way. I didn't know
SNL,
that.
Yeah. Right.
No, it was Bill Burr, the comedian, I think.
No, it was Horatio Sanz, really.
Well, Horatio Sanz is in the show, but I'm confused as to who he played, I guess.
I'm pretty sure it was. And then Brian Posehn, the speeder driver, he's on Drunk History a lot, stand-up comedian. I like him, too. It was fun.
Oh, yeah. I think actually you're right, Rich. Horatio Sanz played Mithral. That was the guy at the beginning.
Yeah, okay.
Mithral. Is that the guy at the beginning? Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he seemed more like a Horatio Sanz type. Because Bill Burr, do you guys know, have you watched his comedy? He's kind of gruff, and he's really funny. And apparently he has a reputation for giving people shit for liking Star Wars. And so J.J. Abrams thought it would be funny to ask him to be in it. And he's like, I don't know. Right. I've been giving people shit. And but all right.
Yeah, you know what? There's no character name listed for Bill Burr, but he's on the cast list. So I don't know who he was.
Maybe he's not in it yet.
Wow. Yeah, it's possible. You're sure. Yeah. Like Gina Carano. She's in the show, but we haven't seen her yet.
Right. I'm looking forward to that. Speaking of that. Rich, what's coming up next week on The Mandalorian? Or actually, it's going to be in a few days here.
Yeah. The next episode is titled Chapter 2. And it says, target in hand, the Mandalorian must now contend with scavengers. directed by Rick Famuyiwa and written by Jon Favreau.
I think they're all written by Jon Favreau, but that's a good thing.
He wrote, I think, 6 of the 8, and 2 of them were written by other people. And Taika Waititi is going to direct the last one. I'm excited about that. Who did the last Thor movie and What We Do in the Shadows and stuff like that.
Yep.
So Dave Filoni wrote 5, and Christopher Yost and Rick Famuyiwa wrote number 6, and Jon Favreau wrote all the other ones. All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, guys. Good to be back.
Rob, it was fun, man. This was great.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. I'm excited for the next one. If you guys want to write in or record a message like Steve Brown did and send it in for us to play, you can send it to us at groovy@podcastica.com.
And if you'd like to check out our Facebook page, do that at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And of course, we are on Twitter and Instagram at housepodcastica.
And please check out our other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com. You can find my Walking Dead podcast there. Strange Indeed is there with Reem and Sean. And if you want to hear more of Chris, you can hear him at talkingdeadpodcast.com. Next episode actually drops, as I mentioned, in a couple days on Friday. And we're aiming to have the podcast out by Sunday morning. And hopefully, if we can manage to align our schedules, we'll keep doing that every week because they're coming out every Friday. But if one of us has to skip out, then we'll find a Mandalorian to step in.
Nice.
Good idea.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
We have spoken.